And our next case for argument is Garcia v. Colvin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, appellant Michael Garcia. Plaintiff alleges that the administrative law judge in this case erred in rejecting the opinions of both the treating physician, Dr. Lucina, and the consulting examiner's physician's opinion, Dr. Romani, in not providing any basis or analysis for the specific functional limitations that the ALJ found in his credibility determination and in failing to explain why he rejected the vocational expert testimony concerning jobs which required the use of judgment. I'm going to go through a few of the findings of the ALJ found at page 24 of the administrative record, page 72 of appellant's appendix. The ALJ finds that plaintiff essentially admitted that he was not disabled as of the date that he alleged disability in 2008, but that's actually not true. Mr. Garcia did state that he would have continued working had the company not closed, but at the time he was missing work 2 and 3 days a week, but the company was allowing him to do that and to stay on. So while he admitted that he would have continued working had the company stayed open, he would not have, he didn't admit that he wasn't disabled. In fact, he was only able to work because the company allowed him to miss a good deal of time.
Did I miss this? Did the ALJ address that 2 to 3 days a week dimension of that comment?
So no, Your Honor, he did not. Further on the page, the ALJ said that Mr. Garcia stated he spends a good deal of time lying down, but that the medical evidence doesn't support the need to lie down. But the ALJ makes that finding just in a vacuum. He doesn't connect it to the medical evidence. And we have a person with end-stage liver disease and thrombocytopenia and anemia and a good deal of other conditions. And the ALJ doesn't explain why the medical evidence establishing these very serious medical conditions.
You say end state. Do you mean he's dying? Or what does end state mean?
Well, Dr. Lucina did give the opinion that it was a terminal condition.
And the consulting guy said he should be considered for a transplant. I was going to ask.
That's correct.
What's his condition today?
He has not had a liver transplant. He's been on and off the transplant list. It's our understanding. Now, these are from conversations a law student who worked for me had with Mr. Garcia recently. He's still in and out of the hospital because of his abdominal pain. Sometimes his platelets are too low, so he can't be on the list. He actually stabilized still with end-stage liver disease recently.
So he's sometimes too sick to get a liver transplant.
That's correct. And now I think they thought he was actually a little better, but last week he went in actually to thank his doctors for helping him, and they wanted to readmit him to the hospital because he was looking so bad. And apparently this week he's seeing the specialist in Indianapolis again.
Has he filed a new application?
No, he has not. So additionally, the ALJ makes the statement that because Mr. Garcia said his pain was 8 on a 10-point scale, but that he was exaggerating his pain because he hadn't sought the type of medical treatment and management that one would expect for someone with disabling pain. And frankly, I just can't understand that finding. Again, once Mr. Garcia went to the hospital in June of 2010, throughout the ALJ's decision, he was in and out of the hospital. He was seeing specialists, hematologists, oncologists, gastroenterologists. He was on narcotic medication. Every time he went to the hospital, they had him on morphine. He was getting Dilaudid. So I don't understand how the ALJ could say he wasn't getting the type of medical treatment one would expect if he was in severe pain. He was getting exactly the type of treatment I think one would expect for someone with a severe medical condition.
Mr. Schultz, could I ask you, the ALJ said at some point, in essence, because I'm finding that Mr. Garcia is not disabled, even though the agency's doctor says he needs ought to be considered for a transplant and his doctor says he's in end-stage liver disease, I don't need to decide about the effects of what I think of as the 1996 legislation about alcoholism and drug addiction. If we remand this, how does that apply? How does that apply if somebody has stopped drinking?
The agency's position is that a person could be considered not disabled only if the continued use of the substance or alcohol is the cause of the disability. Once Mr. Garcia stopped drinking, whatever conditions he had that were no longer being impacted by the current drinking would not be considered. So the ALJ would potentially have to consider the impact of alcohol for the period prior to the time that he stopped drinking. But if at that point, at some point even prior to when he stopped drinking, if he was in end-stage liver disease, then the fact that he still was drinking probably would not be a valid basis for denying the claim.
But in essence, it looks at current activity, drinking or drug addiction, as opposed to long-term effects of those behaviors.
That's correct. I mean, once a medical condition is independently just exists independent of the substance or alcohol use, then that's what the commission
once you've done the damage. So.
That's correct. Okay. And the ALJ says that Mr. Garcia's testimony and the medical evidence indicate that his medications cause him to become fatigued during the day. But then the ALJ says that he has accommodated this by limiting the claimant to simple routine repetitive tasks. But again, there's no analysis of that. There's no explanation why this person who has anemia because of thrombocytopenia and liver disease, that his fatigue would be accommodated by limiting him to simple routine tasks rather than also considering the fact that he might have to lie down during the day, as he testified, because he's very, very tired. Then the ALJ goes on to reject the opinion of the state agency doctor who found that Mr. Garcia did not have even a severe impairment despite being diagnosed with end-stage liver disease. And the ALJ then talks about the consultative examiner's opinion. And this court in Bjornsson reversed in part because the ALJ rejected the consultative examiner's opinion with the court finding that there would be no reason for that examiner to provide an opinion that was favorable to the plaintiff unless that was the honest belief of the doctor. And in this case, the ALJ relies on normal findings that Dr. Romani provided, and it's true that there was normal muscle strength and normal neurological findings, but those things aren't signs or symptoms of end-stage liver disease. Dr. Romani also found an enlarged liver and spider nevi, certain vein-type things in the back and the chest, and abdominal pain and tenderness. And those things are signs and symptoms of end-stage liver disease, but
there's
the ALJ didn't discuss that.
There's a kind of glaring mistake in the ALJ's recitation of Dr. Romani's findings having to do with the abdominal pain.
Yes, the ALJ found...
The no.
Yeah, Dr. Romani found there was abdominal pain, and the ALJ said that the doctor found no abdominal pain. And again, you know, so the ALJ says that the normal findings are inconsistent with the doctor's opinion of disability, where actually Dr. Romani made findings that were consistent with end-stage liver disease. And as Judge Hamilton, you pointed out, Dr. Romani actually went to a somewhat remarkable step in these consultative examinations and actually recommended to Mr. Garcia that he should consider seeking a liver transplant. So here we have the claimant's treating doctor who is providing an opinion that the claimant cannot sustain functional activity. The Social Security's doctor, who's also, or the consulting doctor, who's providing the same opinion. We have multiple significant evidence of the severity of this claimant's liver disease, as well as other conditions that have now been caused, and yet the ALJ improperly rejected the opinions of these doctors. And without relying on an opposing medical opinion, found Mr. Garcia not disabled. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Waldron?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Luke Waltring on behalf of the Commissioner. The timing is a key in this case, and the appellant, at the time that he alleged becoming disabled, it was in June of 2008. He'd recently lost his job because the company that he worked for went out of business, and he admitted that he would have kept the job, would have kept working.
Yeah, but apparently he was only working part-time.
That's true, Your Honor, but he was an...
Now, look, we have cases which say if you happen to have a very indulgent employer who lets you work and pays you, even though you can't work full-time, that doesn't mean you're not disabled. And similarly, there are people who are disabled, but they're desperate, so they work, but they're still disabled and entitled to benefits. Isn't that the situation here?
Under certain fact patterns, that is.
Isn't that the situation here?
The government's
answer: yes or no.
No, that. We don't believe that is the situation here.
Well, why was he being allowed to take 2 or 3 days off every week?
Well, as far as him taking those days off, that's part of his allegations, and we believe that.
And the ALJ simply failed to engage with that. The ALJ said he would have kept working, and just ignored the rest of the qualifier if I'm missing 2 or 3 days a week, where nobody would treat him as non-disabled.
Well, the ALJ did not specifically mention that, no, in his decision.
Well, I can't hear you.
The ALJ did not specifically mention that in his decision.
Well, that's a rather... Now, also, didn't the vocational expert say that if you miss more than 1 day of work a month, you would have difficulty becoming employed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, this fellow couldn't possibly not miss. He was missing several days a week.
Well, Your Honor, that's if...
Why didn't the ALJ discuss that?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, how can we uphold a decision when he doesn't discuss a critical fact?
Well, the fact is that the ALJ didn't hold the appellant to the working standards that he was held to prior to this. He limited him to sedentary jobs.
But he did rely heavily upon the half of that statement, that in 2008 he would have kept working if he could. Did any doctor find that the plaintiff actually had the residual functional capacity that the ALJ found?
Exactly, no. No,
close? What was the closest?
Well, Dr. Lucina found...
You're referring to his September 10 letter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there September 10th, 2010, when he says he is considered disabled and unable to perform any functions. I understand you and the ALJ want to argue it's not the doctor's call whether he's disabled, but when he says he can't perform any functions and goes on with these other limitations, how do you say that's consistent with sedentary work?
Well, we would say that that was an opinion reserved for the commissioner, as you said.
Yes.
But the
commissioner's opinion has to be based upon some medical evidence here.
Right, and we would say that the actual medical evidence that was the medical opinion in September 2010 was that the appellant could lift up to 20 pounds and could stand up to 30 minutes.
And he's unable to perform any functions. He has chronic pain and fatigue. His current condition is chronic and terminal. He will be unable to return to any form of employment. How does that support the ALJ's decision?
We don't think that it does, and that's not what we're arguing. We're arguing that, you know, it wasn't Dr. Lucina's call. It wasn't his.
It's not
Lucina's call as to the final legal decision about disability, but the ALJ's decision has to be based upon evidence. So let me go back to the question about whether his residual functional capacity determination was based upon any medical evidence. What was the closest? If Lucina's letter is the closest support for that conclusion that Mr. Garcia, while being eligible or maybe too sick for a liver transplant, is able to do full-time sedentary work, I'd like to see it.
Well, Your Honor, that that part of Dr. Lucina's opinion, along with Dr. Romani's findings regarding his ability to do certain actions, such as having no nausea, vomiting, no swelling, stiffness, or effusion of the
Well, if you're going to rely on Romani, you're in trouble because the district or the ALJ just misread it, right? With respect to abdominal pain.
Right, and that's the only part that he misread. But he does recognize and acknowledge that there was pain, abdominal pain, that appellant did suffer from. He misquotes the finding from Dr. Romani's.
And relies heavily upon that misquote. So
we would say that
you're wrong when you say that the medical expert can't testify that a person is disabled. Because disability has two separate meanings. There's the way a layperson uses it or a doctor uses it, and the way the law uses it. So the doctor can't determine whether the person is disabled as a matter of law, but he can certainly say this person is disabled. He can't work. He's physically incapable of working.
Yes, Your Honor, and if I led you to believe that I thought that...
You did, right.
I apologize. The doctor is able to make that opinion, but under the regulations it wouldn't be considered a medical opinion. And under the regulations...
Well, that's ridiculous, because doctors will talk... Ask a doctor, you know, can I become a professional boxer? And he says, no, you're too old, and you're disabled from that type of physical activity, right? Nothing wrong with that.
If it's on the issue of disability, though, then our stance is that it's...
What is the medical evidence? And he talks about, you know, daily living activities, and we've been critical of the efforts of some of the ALJs to generalize from what you can do at home to what you could do working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But what does he have in the way of any kind of medical expert to suggest this person can work full-time?
I think it's more so the lack of medical evidence in this case.
They've got their own expert, their own agency expert testifying that he can't do anything.
But the key to that is that appellant is saying that he can't do anything starting in June of 2008, and there's no medical records up until June 2010. And that just happens to be the time when...
But in 2008, he wasn't able to work full-time, apparently.
That's what appellant alleges. But
what?
There's no medical evidence to support that. And
well, presumably, end-stage liver disease does not come on overnight, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, Your Honor.
Builds up over years. So.
Correct. And I think the ALJ accounted for that. I mean, he did find that this end-stage liver disease was a severe impairment, and he did significantly limit the appellant to sedentary work. I mean, the appellant himself, I believe, testified that he could do more than I guess what Dr. Lucina said, where he couldn't function. I mean, even the appellant testified that he could do more than that. And I think that's also, the ALJ also incorporated that into his residual functional capacity finding.
Does the Justice Department ever confess error on determinations by Social Security Administration that someone isn't disabled?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm trying to think, Mr. Woltering. I was in a district court for 15 years where we had a pretty high volume of these things, and I probably decided 400 or 500 of these. I've never seen anybody this sick who was denied disability benefits.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, you know, our stance is that the ALJ had the evidence in front of him. He didn't have some of the evidence toward the end that you see in the record. He didn't have the evidence that the opposing counsel discussed as far as the follow-ups regarding his inability, or I forget exactly what he said, but
the critical failure of the ALJ is not to explore the significance of his apparently not being able to work full time in 2008, and just having an indulgent employer who was willing to pay him for part time work. The ALJ never got into that. You know, he never considered the significance of that. Isn't that correct?
That was not in his decision.
He didn't. He ignored a critical fact. Because a minute ago you said, well, yeah, the medical evidence is 2010. He needs to show disability in 2008. On that critical case, is there anything pointing to 2008? The ALJ just overlooked it. How could it possibly be upheld?
Well, because it's appellant's burden to show that he's disabled in this case, and really all that he has to show.
Evidence of disability would be that you were not able to work and your employer recognized it but was willing to keep you on anyway. And that's the evidence. Now, what's the evidence against it? What's the evidence that he could work in 2008?
The evidence that he could work is that he never sought any medical treatment until 2010. And the ALJ.
Is there any exploration of why not? There's still an awful lot of people who don't have health insurance and who. And particularly if they're in less formal parts of the economy, small construction operations are unlikely to have benefits.
Yes, Your Honor. And in this case, there was mention of him not having health insurance, but he was still able to go to the hospital in 2010 when he wanted to seek treatment.
And well, sure.
He got plenty.
We're trying to measure the degrees of desperation here, right?
Yes.
Isn't that
yes.
something the ALJ needs to come to grips with if he's going to rely upon that to deny benefits to somebody this sick?
Yes, Your Honor. And we would say that, you know, someone has to be significantly disabled to not even be able to do sedentary work, to not be able to sit for
no
the
doubt.
Vast
yeah,
majority
you were a good
of the day.
Dying person for you. Yes, I noticed in the olden days, the favorite job that the Social Security Administration trotted out was being a ticket collector at a theater. You would be sitting. You wouldn't have to have legs. That was helpful for them when they had an amputee that they didn't want to give benefits to. Now the modern one is sitting at a surveillance video. Right, you're just sitting. Don't need legs. Don't have to be able to. Walk, breathe, just breathe a little bit, right? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Mr. Schultz, anything from you?
I just wanted to mention a couple of things quickly. Mr. Garcia does not have to prove he was disabled in 2008 to be eligible for benefits. Even if he was disabled as of his hospitalization in June of 2010, he'd be eligible at least for SSI benefits. Also, there's a ruling, I believe it's 96-5P, but also the regulation at 20 CFR 404-1527, that if a doctor gives an opinion on the ultimate issue of disability, that opinion is not entitled to controlling weight because there's a special definition of that. But the opinion still has to be analyzed per the checklist of factors that's set forth in the regulation. So as Your Honors were saying, just because the doctor says, I don't believe that my patient can work at all, that's still a significant opinion that has to be evaluated per the regulations. The only other thing I'd say is that while Mr. Garcia did say that he could at times sit for a longer period of time than Dr. Lucina opined, Mr. Garcia testified that that was only when he was having a good day and that he only had 2 good days a week, and the ALJ didn't analyze that factor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Schultz and Mr. Waltering.